Good afternoon and welcome to Time Out, your program of informative interviews with persons of note, persons with fascinating careers, leaders of today and tomorrow, and others who will allow you to invest an hour and receive a guaranteed valuable return. Stay tuned. We always like to use that word guaranteed because one of our guests is a financial advisor. And I know he guarantees the proper return to
Don't use that word.
Okay.
You're out of compliance.
As a retired banker, we always guaranteed our return.
See, you guys, you didn't
very
have to.
Low.
They don't have to introduce themselves. Ian, do you have a guarantee word to say? Are you going to be quiet?
I'll probably be quiet for now.
Okay, we have three guests here, and we have another one in limbo outside in the other room. This is our semi-annual sports event. These two gentlemen, Bob Ward and Tim Hucks, probably know as much about sports as any non-professional writers, broadcasters, media people, or whatever, because they know they have a comment about everything. And Ian Feather, who is on his way back to college, was nice enough to be invited to stop by here today and have a word. And our friend Rocco, who does the Saturday morning music hall, is out in the other lobby, and he will be back in. We're talking sports, and everybody has opinions. Right, Bob?
Absolutely.
Especially us. That's all we have. We have no facts, just opinions.
Well, that's the way most politicians are. You're not you're not that bad, Tim.
If you ask a question, we always know the answer.
That's true.
Because if we don't, we make it up.
That's right.
You sound like somebody I've been watching on television lately, but whose name I can't remember.
Hey, a guy that you might use his name while you're playing bridge?
Yeah, right.
Okay. Now, let's get on. Let's don't talk about that.
Okay, I thank you guys for coming, all of you. I appreciate it. This is a fun show. You know, if there's anything I love to talk about, it is sports more than anything else, even other things that you don't talk about. But how about the Olympics?
Ah, there you go.
Fun.
I enjoyed the Olympics.
Wasn't that Rio wonderful?
I didn't watch, hours and hours and hours.
I watched lots of hours.
I watched a fair amount.
Yeah.
Well, I saw things that you never see.
Yeah.
Sports. Like
I got a new favorite sport.
Okay.
Women's rugby.
Women's rugby. I thought you were going to say beach volleyball.
Well, that's been my favorite.
For obvious reasons.
That's been my favorite for a long time. But that women's rugby, that was fun to watch.
Now, be careful, Bob. We don't want to get our, this station is very, very careful about language and other things and inferences.
Well, I have
There was no inference to it. It was fun to watch.
Was it, buddy?
Yes.
I have a new Olympic hero, and it's a woman. And her name is Helen Maroulis, and she won the U.S. gold in the 53-kilogram wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
Women's wrestling defeated a three-time Olympic gold medalist. First, and I read about her. She actually trained with the woman that she defeated. She went to Japan and trained with her, and she defeated her by using her mental attitude as opposed to some technique or something.
Wow.
Basically by being patient.
Yeah. Well, she's a little bit different to build than the beach volleyball girls.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no doubt. But she was so excited and so thrilled to win. And, I mean, she brought tears to my eyes just watching her in her Olympic medal ceremony.
Yeah. I was the same way with Maya Dorado, I believe is her name.
Swimmer.
That girl, her face was just absolute joy.
Yeah.
She had the biggest smile. She's a honors graduate at Stanford, on her way to Atlanta to some big consulting job with some financial consulting firm in Atlanta. And she won, I think she won three or four golds and one silver.
Wow.
And
her one and only Olympics.
Her only Olympics. And just the joy in her face was just what made it all worthwhile to watch.
Well, that's a good point, Bob. Watching the playing of the American National Anthem with some of these folks with their gold medals was really a very moving experience.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine the effort that people like that put to get that
absolutely.
Far.
And I heard somebody say something on radio this morning. A lot of those people who win went back to work today. Yes. In their regular jobs.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not paid. You know, they have had time off, I'm sure, to train and prepare and all that. But a lot of them probably went back to work today. I mean, that's really... Yeah.
It's a little bit different than the Olympic basketball experience or the Olympic golf experience for
those were the professional all the way around,
And those were the folks that basically, a lot of them chose not to participate.
A lot of the golfers did not want
to
go.
A lot of golfers, you know, I think they may rethink that
Well, it's a terrible schedule for golf.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's right in the middle of the
busy
golf
part of the
season.
Summer. Sure, right.
And also, I think another thing I've thought about today, it looked to be like it was well run. I'm sure maybe they were not showing a lot of the hiccups and things like that. But I think the media, the world media, owes Brazil an apology.
Yeah.
So the way they talked so bad about the way it was going to be and everything, I think they did a great job.
I think they should have it there every 4 years.
Now I wasn't there to see it, but but just by watching, it seemed to be.
Well, of course, Brazil, Rio itself is a masterpiece of artwork where it's situated,
right?
And your camera picks that whole scene up with the mountains behind it, and.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
And I guess the local people were very good hosts.
Sound
very
like
friendly,
it.
Affable.
Friendly to a, well, except for one small incident.
Well, that was more our guy's fault than ours.
That was more Mr. Bathroom.
Somebody wants to talk to you guys.
Uh-uh.
Are you calling to talk about sports?
Hey, Bill, sure am. This is Joe Donovan. How you doing?
Okay. Don't talk too long, Joe. I got very important people on the show here.
Oh, I'm listening. I understand, my friend. I just want to throw this out for discussion on what you just discussed, the Olympic basketball team. I've never liked the idea of having NBA players represent us. I think it's cheating, in fact, and it's a violation of amateur status. I want to go back to using amateurs, college players. What do y'all think?
Okay, guys, so here's the point. You heard this point. He doesn't like NBA.
Yeah, I heard his point.
Are the other countries going to use all amateurs
as well? That's the problem. The reason that we went to using NBA players is because that the other countries kept teams together for a number of years, and once they started playing in the NBA, you know, we didn't have a lot of foreign players until the 80s. And then when they started coming into the NBA and started representing their teams internationally, that's when the U.S. decided to use NBA players. Well,
so it started. You're saying it started elsewhere.
Well, yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. There were foreign players playing for their countries who were like professionals.
They were professionals.
They were.
They were being paid.
They were being paid. That was their jobs. They trained all year. All those kind of things. So.
Well, I think Kevin Durant has given the California Warriors the championship. the way he played, and now he's now a part of that.
I don't know if I'd crown him just yet, because I think they were crowned when they won 73 regular season games, and then they didn't quite make it.
Well, they got beaten
maybe
by
LeBron James.
So Kevin Durant's going to be the LeBron James of San Francisco.
Well, we'll see.
Okay, well, say anything you want about
Now, I want to talk a little more about the Olympics.
Keep talking about it.
I think there was one thing that occurred that had never happened before.
Tim, I think you've studied up on this.
I have. I took notes. Well, actually, I was watching them, and so I took notes on stuff that I...
You got a whole page of notes.
That I thought was really special. First women's sweep in track and field was in the 100-meter hurdles.
Right.
USA women, Brianna Rollins with the gold, Nia Lee with the silver, and Christy Kastner with the bronze.
And when you saw them cross the goal line, you didn't know that.
No, the third place for sure.
That was tight.
Yeah, right.
Third place for sure. There was 0.02 of a second difference between third and fourth. And as they say, fourth is the loneliest spot in the whole Olympics.
Yeah, I guess that's right, yeah. So that's your point.
And that was a first. And another thing, I would be remiss if I did not mention the U.S. Women's Rowing 8. You know, I've only talked about women's sports in the Olympics so far.
Of course, your wife is a rower.
The women's eight has won 11 world titles in a row. They have not lost since 2005. They've won three Olympic golds and all the world titles that have been contested since then. And the coolest thing about that is there are different women, I believe, in every one of those boats.
Okay.
It was only the second race for these nine, counting the coxswain, these nine. And the first race was in the heat of these Rio Olympics. Mm-hmm. They had never actually rowed together in competition before the Olympics. Of course, in practice and things of that nature.
Uh-huh. Never in competition, though.
No. And the reason for this is, I believe, Title IX. Women's rowing added as a varsity sport in college.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like any feeder program or any successful program, you have to have a feeder program.
Sure.
And there are very few men's varsity rowing teams in college in the United States. Many, many club teams, but not too many varsity teams.
Does Carolina have a
women's varsity?
Through the university, not
through
a club.
The university, okay. but only for men, it's only a club sport.
Oh, that's interesting. For women, it's a professional, it's a college sport, but
it's varsity.
Varsity,
yeah.
But men, it's just the amateur. If you want to call it club,
it's called Title IX.
Yeah. So that's okay. Well, that's that. And what other notes do you have you want to talk about?
Well, you know, a couple other things. Like the, you know, when you talk about greatest of all time, I guess you have to separate sports, because if you only have an opportunity to win one event, because there is only one event, it's difficult to compare that with, say, Usain Bolt, mm-hmm. who, in my mind, is the greatest sprinter of all time.
I know, but he can really move that.
Three gold medals in three consecutive Olympics. That's pretty amazing, you know, winning the 100 meters and the 200 meters three times in a row is phenomenal. I mean, I can't imagine you can train that long. He's 30 years old, I think.
Uh-huh.
He is.
So that's
31.
Now?
He was 31 the night he won the last gold medal in the
so race. He's three Olympics in a row?
Three Olympics
so
in
that's
a row.
12 years.
Yeah.
Nine medals.
Yeah.
Well, essentially 8 years, but still, you got to train. But
yeah,
now that compares to Carl Lewis, who also has nine golds.
Uh-huh.
Carl Lewis did the long jump in addition to the 100, the 200, and the 4x100. He has 10 medals altogether. And a guy from back in your day, Bill, you probably went to school with him, Paavo Nurmi.
I remember the name.
You remember that
right.
name?
Right. Oh, yeah.
He was in the 1920, the 1924, and the 1928 Olympics. Nurmi also had nine gold medals, but he ran things like the 1,500 meter, the 3,000 meter, the 5,000 meter.
Can you imagine running that duration, Keith? Ian, you used to do cross-country running, didn't you?
Yeah, for a couple of years.
Well, what's it like compared to what you just saw here?
I mean, I can't say I actually watched the track and field this year, but... Yeah, I can't. I just can't imagine being on that level, you know. Something else.
A cross-country race in high school, is it 5K?
It's 5K, yeah, 3.1 miles.
Okay.
And that's, that's a fairly long way to run. But this guy won the gold medal in 5,000 and 10,000, I think, once in the same year.
Mm-hmm.
I think you pushed Bill back a little bit in age there. I think he competed against Jesse Owens when he was competing.
I remember him. That was back in the 30s.
I think Bill ran against Jesse Owens.
Did you break 10 seconds in
I probably broke something in the kitchen. But there was no television. You couldn't watch it in those days. But now, are you still working on the Olympics, Tim?
Well, since you brought up Jesse Owens, there is something. Oh, well, the greatest of all time is Michael Phelps.
Oh, yeah.
28 Swim. Medals, 23 gold. I mean, I don't care what sport you're in. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's phenomenal. And the guy, you look at the guy, he must have the biggest lungs of any human being ever. I mean, I've seen a V shape, but this guy is like you take the middle out of the W. I
mean, yeah, yeah.
Jeez.
Well, it's amazing, and and right now, as you said, some of people are going back to work, but some of them also are going to start training for 2020. I'm sorry, it's not going to be in Rio again because I think it was a wonderful place to have the Olympics, and the local people were very hospitable. And the closing show the other night, which I watched, I don't usually watch all these, but you could see they were just having so much fun, the dancers out there. They were just enjoying themselves.
Well, that's Rio.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I'd like to mention some coaches that I really have a lot of respect for that don't get a lot of publicity because they coach lower, non-revenue sports.
Olympic sports.
The coach, I'm talking about college courts, coaches, yeah. Right here. Yeah. I'd like the particularly the women's soccer coach at Carolina and the women's lacrosse coach at Carolina. Both those people are, and Durance, is that how you pronounce his name?
Durance and Durance.
Have you ever had him on your show?
No, I've had the lacrosse coach on my show, the lady, Jenny Levy.
Yeah.
Although she said, I can't come to the station and talk because I have three little kids at home. So she called. Her interview was by phone. And she started the lacrosse game at Carolina. Right,
She came from Virginia. Right.
And started the lacrosse. And I think both she and Durance are dynamite.
Well, if you could get Anson on the show, that would be a plum, let me tell you.
Yeah.
He's a great speaker.
He's a great speaker, and all you're going to have to do is get him started.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean,
he's got story after story after story.
And there's two Duke coaches that I also put in this category. One is the men's lacrosse coach, John Donowski, who came to Duke after some kind of an event and has done a great job. And I know how he coaches the team because my grandson was on the team and told me what playing was like under John Donowski. And also the Duke women's golf coach is a terrific.
Oh, my goodness,
Dan Brooks. He has women's golf. There were two in the Olympics. A freshman who was the roommate next room to my granddaughter last year, Virginia Elena Carta from Italy, won the NCAA Women's Championship.
Right.
And she won another women's USGA championship.
Was it U.S. Amateur? Women's
no,
US
the amateur,
amateur
was this weekend.
So she couldn't compete in that. But
anyway, she won. This young lady has won two championships.
Dan Brooks has been there for substantially international.
Yeah, so he's been there for 30 years, and people have been telling me to get him on my show. So
yeah, I heard Anson Durance speak last week, and he was talking about the Duke women's soccer team this year.
The Duke
women's soccer
coming
team.
Coming up this now.
This year. Uh-huh. He said will be one of the best women's soccer teams ever.
Is that right?
Around here.
He said they
are loaded.
Uh-huh. Well, Duke women's soccer has never really won any championships.
Well,
have they?
He says they're a powerhouse this year.
Well, it's kind of troublesome because these coaches are not revenue coaches.
No.
There are revenue coaches in all these colleges that maybe you don't respect as much as the ones we're talking about. But it's just the way it is, and I guess we can't make any judgments except we know it's going to stay that way.
At his talk the other day, he said his dream is to make women's soccer at Carolina revenue neutral.
Okay.
Revenue neutral, meaning so they pay for themselves.
So right now they're a loss.
Well, they are really promoting people. You can buy a season ticket to women's soccer for $39.
Whoa!
Wow. Well, soccer
you can buy half
is
a ticket to a basketball game for $39.
Yeah. Soccer in this country is becoming more popular at all levels, isn't it?
I think so.
High school soccer.
Well, I think it's very popular for people to play. I don't think they've attracted the number of fans There's a lot of other sports.
I believe a good crowd for an ACC women's soccer game would be 3,000.
Mm-hmm. Probably.
Which is, I mean, and they don't often draw that many.
Well, the cross matches I've gone to were probably never 3,000.
Right. Probably in the hundreds.
Even though they were championships. For a couple of years.
And lacrosse is a pretty fun sport to watch.
Lacrosse is a great sport to watch.
Yeah, compared, speaking back to the Olympics, I enjoyed watching handball, which is kind of like lacrosse, except they don't wear helmets and you don't hit anybody. You just throw the ball.
Right.
And
right.
It looked like a fun sport to play.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I don't think it's going to go far in academic competition.
Several years ago, I remember reading an article about that. Carolina had a former football player who I think played on the U.S. handball team several Olympics ago. I mean, it is.
I remember that.
But I can't remember.
I don't remember his name.
I think he played football in the Dick Crum years. And he went on, he started playing this team handball and became an Olympian.
Where?
For the United States.
Did we
it
have
was
a
from
team?
UNC? Yeah.
Oh. At that time, I don't know if we had one this year, but we've had them in the past.
Uh huh. Well, it's a fun sport to watch, anyway. So the Olympics did open our eyes to a lot of things that we didn't know existed,
like women's rugby,
like women's rugby, right?
Bob, explain the difference between rugby 7 and the other kind of rugby.
Well, from a little bit I picked up about it, they only have 7 on the field.
What's a normal rugby?
And they only have. Seven. They only play 7 minute. I guess it's quarters, so it's really fast.
Does a regular rugby team have like 11?
They may have more than 11.
Jeez, I'm showing my ignorance now. Yeah. I don't know anything about rugby.
Yeah, but it's.
So, did you gentlemen ever see a Major League Baseball game?
Ever?
Oh, you did. Even living in North Carolina where they have no Major League team?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, you know, we're allowed to travel outside.
Yeah, we can drive to Atlanta.
To
we can drive to D.C. I even went to New York a couple
to get
times, Bill.
From the governor, of course.
Gee, did we ever see a Major League baseball
game? I've been to Yankee Stadium.
I went to St. Louis. I went to St. Louis to see the Cardinals play.
AT&T Park in San Francisco.
I've been to Baltimore. Been to Philadelphia.
Baltimore.
Do you see baseball games in all cities?
I even saw the old Washington Senators play.
I saw the last game in the Vet in Philadelphia. It was the Yankees versus the Phillies.
Believe it or not, Bill, they played. I've even seen Major League Baseball games in Durham.
For the
they played an exhibition game. I saw the Red Sox play the Washington Senators in the old Durham Athletic Park.
For the information of our listeners, we have two elderly gentlemen as our guests today.
The first Major League game I ever
student.
Be quiet a minute. The first Major League game I saw was in Winston-Salem. The Philadelphia Phillies played the New York Yankees.
When?
It was in 1957, I think.
What kind of a stadium did they have in Winston-Salem Major League Baseball?
It was back in those days, teams would travel. They on their way home from spring training, they would stop at locations and play games.
Uh-huh.
Winston-Salem had a very nice ballpark. It was a minor league ballpark, just like Durham Athletic Park was when I saw the Red Sox.
Winston-Salem Red Sox, as far as I recall.
Yeah. And so the Phillies played the Yankees in Ernie Shore Field in Winston-Salem. And I was in the fourth grade when I went to see that game.
You've aged well, Bob. I'm proud of you.
I just want you to know we can get out and see things right
And
now.
Also, you know.
You don't spend your life in the Dean Dome.
No, I get out.
The New York Yankees played at Bochomer Stadium.
Twice.
At least twice.
What stadium?
Maybe three times.
Bochomer, here in Chapel Hill.
Right here at UNC.
They played Carolina.
I've probably even got a photo of Ron Guidry with my baby boy.
Reggie Jackson hit a home run. There's pine trees in the right field. Reggie Jackson hit a home run up in the top of those pine trees.
I think it's time to tell our audience we're talking with Tim Hux and Bob Ward, who are now regaling us with fantasy conversation.
No, this is the truth.
And
George Steinbrenner's daughter went to the University of North Carolina, and he had his team stop here on the way back from spring training at least twice.
Okay, that's you saw them?
Yes once in 1981.
I saw them both times.
When I got autographs from Tommy John, Dave Winfield, Trying to remember some of the other players. Not Reggie Jackson. Reggie Jackson wouldn't talk to the fans.
Okay.
He was too cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, who's going to win the World Series? Who's going to be playing in the World Series this year?
The Chicago Cubs.
As a Cardinals fan, I'm afraid, but the Cubs are...
Cubs looking good.
Good, yeah. Cubbies.
That's one. That's only one team, though. They have to play somebody else.
Yeah,
they
well,
do. I don't know who.
You don't follow the American League, I guess.
Well, I'm not. You know, I'd follow the American League, but I don't know who's going to win. Maybe your team, yeah. Bill. Yeah, maybe the Cleveland Indians.
Cleveland's been that's in there all year.
That's where my money's going, and I put a lot of money on that team. I've been to League Park. Now that's a thing.
Have you ever been to a major league ball game, Bill?
Have you ever heard
He's not of, answering that question.
Have you ever heard of League Park?
Yeah.
League Park?
League Park was mm-hmm. where the Cleveland Indians played when I was a kid.
That was before
they built before they had the stadium.
Memorial Stadium or whatever it's called.
The Mistake by the Lake.
Municipal Stadium.
Municipal Stadium.
Right.
When they call the Mistake by the Lake.
I know, that's right, yeah.
Nice wind.
And Cleveland's had its ups and downs, but back in League Park, I went to the game with my buddy who lived across the street from me, who had all the autographs of a lot of the players, and we sat close enough to the field that Charlie Keller, who played for the Yankees, would come by and talk to us mm-hmm. when he's not at bat. So, you know, that's getting close.
That's pretty
to the major leagues when they come by and talk to you.
Well, the game I went to see in Winston-Salem, they sold out.
He's going to up me now.
They had they had standing room only seats, so that's the kind of seats we got.
Uh-huh.
We were sitting down the right field line, literally down the right field line.
Okay.
You
were sitting or standing?
Sitting on the grass.
Oh, on the ground.
In foul territory, about 10 feet from the right field line. And the locker room was down in right field. And one of the few things I still remember about it is all the players had to walk by you going back and forth to the locker room.
Okay. And did they stop and say hello?
No, they just kept moving.
And you were in a fourth grade then?
Yep.
Well, no, Bob's got pretty good memory for an old guy, doesn't he? And Rocco, you lived in Newark. And what did you see, the Yankees or the Brooklyn Dodgers? Who did you watch?
I did, Bill. First of all, it's great to be on with Tim, Bob, yourself, and Tim is showing me some pictures.
From 1981.
Oh, there you go.
But yes.
Ron Guidry and my son,
okay.
When he was 6 months
I see
old.
Yeah, okay, Ron Guidry, yeah. Thanks for the picture. I'm sorry we can't have television.
Looks good on radio.
Bill, I was lucky enough to go to Ebbets Field in Brooklyn and Yankee Stadium in New York and the Giant Stadium.
How about the Polo Grounds?
Polo Grounds.
Yeah. Went to all three.
Yeah, cool.
I cannot tell you how many times, and got a chance to see all of the great players from the late 40s, actually, till after World War II, till the mid 60s.
So you saw Willie Mays,
all of them. Stan Musial, Mickey Mantle,
yeah.
Yogi Berra.
Stanley.
I mean, all of King Kong, Charlie Keller was on his way out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's
in the 40s.
Yeah,
and I remember seeing him in Yankee Stadium.
Wow.
Joe DiMaggio.
I saw Joe DiMaggio play in person.
Yeah.
It's wonderful how old people talk about sports, isn't it? Here we are, a bunch of guys all over 50. We're just barely over 50.
Ian's over there going, "How old are these guys?"
He's going, "Who are these guys? I never heard of them."
I think the best place to see a Major League Baseball game, without a doubt, was Ebbets Field.
Yeah.
Because Ebbets Field was sort of as big as the old Durham Athletic Park.
They called it a bandbox, didn't they?
It was a bandbox. I mean, you could literally talk to the players out there.
That's what I was telling you about it, Mike.
And everybody had a great seat. And they were right, you know, you'd see Duke Schneider come up to bat, or Stan Musial, or Mickey Mantle if the Yankees were there during the World Series. I never went to a World Series game. But you were just in the game as a fan.
And I've read books about it, and the fans were actually part. Everybody knew who everybody was. I mean, same people had the same seats for years and years, and everybody knew who they were, and they all had their own little quirks.
Absolutely.
That they did. And
well, the
things.
Funny part is they would go to the games during the day,
yeah.
And the men would be wearing coats and ties and hats.
That's right.
Well, they snuck off from work.
I know.
That's right. Yeah, they're all day games. That's right. Yeah,
it was really a great place to see a ball.
Well, there's been a lot of memories here, folks. I want to tell. I start telling our people in the audience, who are thousands of them out there listening, about this radio station. You're listening to WCOM. This is your voice in the community. We are a member of this community right here in downtown Carrboro. We are part of the building of the Arts Center, a beautiful and wonderful center in this town of Carrboro. We are supported by people in the community. We are supported by people elsewhere. You can go to our website and make a safe and secure donation, which is tax deductible. You can go to wcomfm.org and make a safe and secure donation, or you can stop by here and stick slide a check in an envelope under the door, and we will give you proper credit so you can take your deduction for that. We do need the support of the community. We just had a recent fundraiser at a local establishment and raised some additional money for the station. But that kind of thing doesn't really carry us, because we have a lot of expenses. Primary expenses for a radio station are keeping the station going. Equipment, batteries, lines, all types of things that need to be done. So,
Bill's salary.
Right. And we all are.
Tim and I will be here till 6 o'clock if anybody wants to drop a check by for us.
That's right.
No, you'll be here till 5 or 6. We shut down at 5 or 6. But anyway.
We'll wait outside.
What about the changing back to college sports for a bit? I've been reading a lot about the concern, I guess it is, of sports writers. Maybe they have nothing else to write about. How the ACC stands for Atlantic Coast Conference, you folks who are listening in California. The football imbalance of the Atlantic Coast Conference. There are a couple of teams that seem to be muscular compared to the rest of the teams who may be not quite as muscular. Is that an issue that's ever going to change?
I think it's going to change this year. I don't mean that. You're talking about Clemson and Florida State.
Right.
Clemson and Florida State have been at the top of the league for some time. It was Florida State almost alone for a number of years. I think they won 9 championships in a row when they first came into the league. And Clemson played for the national championship last year against Alabama. But look for Louisville, University of North Carolina, and Miami, and probably Pittsburgh. Look for those teams to be pretty strong this year. Now, will they challenge? Clemson and Florida State play in the same division, the Atlantic Division.
Fortunately, they play each other every year.
Yeah, okay, they play each other every year. North Carolina didn't play Clemson or Florida State last year. They will play Florida State and Tallahassee this year.
What's the rule about these inner division playing? I don't understand. Yeah.
They have some kind of schedule that they rotate them on. I don't know it, but there's some kind of plan that they have where you play everybody in your division, and you play a couple other other division people.
You play everybody in your division.
Yeah. Everybody in your division.
And then there's a crossover team you play.
You play six games in your division, and then 2 games in the other division.
And then one of those in the other division you play every year. It's like Carolina and State play every year, even though State's in the other division. So each team has.
Is that because of tradition?
Well, yeah, they tried to do that. And then they had to make it up for some of them. And then you rotate around on the other ones. So, I don't know. Like, thank goodness we hadn't played Florida State in 7 years. So, now we got to play.
You're playing them this year.
Yeah. Last time we played them, we beat them.
We beat them, yeah. But, you know.
So, played them in Tallahassee and won.
Yeah.
You did, really? Boy.
Yeah, and we play them down there again. So, that's one thing. Carolina could have a better team this year and not have as good a record because they're playing Florida State.
Well, what is your point about, you mentioned Carolina as a possible leader in the league.
Well, they won the Coastal Division last year, Coastal Division being Miami, Pittsburgh, Virginia Tech, Duke, Georgia Tech, and UVA. They won that last year. They were 8-0 in the Atlantic Coast Conference, 8 wins, no losses. But nationally, they were not nearly as revered, let's say, as Clemson or Alabama or Ohio State. As a matter of fact, they could have potentially won the ACC championship by beating Clemson and still not been in the top 4 national playoff.
Those referees we had, there was no potential about it.
No, there was no potential.
I remember, Bob and Tim, I asked you about that call with those referees last time I was on with you here. And but do you remember the Florida State game? It was a night game maybe 10 or 15 years ago, and it was a huge game. And if
Judgment Day.
If Carolina would have won that game, we would have been in the top five teams in the country.
What's so significant about that game?
I think Brown was the coach.
That was Mac Brown's
last year.
And I think both teams were undefeated. But anyway, both teams were ranked in the top five. And it was at Keenan Stadium. And Florida State waxed us.
Yeah, I think it was like
they came up here to show us who was still the power, and they beat us pretty good. And it was called, they played it up as they called it Judgment Day and all that kind of
made
stuff.
Made up a bunch of T-shirts and things of that nature.
Oh, really?
They had cut the pregame, what they call it, college game day program was here. And
ESPN picks one site.
Paratroopers dropping from the sky?
I don't recall that. We may have had bombers flying over or something.
Yeah, we used to go to the West Point game when I lived in New Jersey, and at the West Point game, they always have paratroopers dropping from the sky.
Golden Knights.
I think, if I remember right, I think we scored first in that game, and everybody just was going bonkers. And Florida, then after that.
That was it.
And then the first play of the second half, I believe, Florida State had an All-American linebacker named Derek Brooks. And he intercepted a pass and ran it in for a touchdown. And
that takes
Don Meredith could have sung "Turn Out the Lights." The party's over at that point.
So that game is over. Well, so college basketball, our college football is still a number one attractor of money in this country, and it's still popular here, even though we're not playing Alabama or Texas. There don't seem to be big football powerhouses in the West as much as in the Southeast, particularly.
Well, I think Oregon. Stanford would argue with that.
Well, but that's a couple of
Stanford may have the Heisman Trophy winner this year.
And well, they've had one before, I know.
Of course, they haven't been this way lately, but Southern Cal's probably got as much college football tradition as anybody.
That's true. That was quite a while ago.
Well, I say it had been a while, but still.
Right, as of now.
But the University of Oregon
seems to be weighted in the Southeast.
Southeast
Conference.
Yeah. And then you throw in Notre Dame, I guess, who usually shows up somewhere because they kind of play by themselves. They're not part of a conference except in other sports.
Yeah, and then you were talking about this scheduling thing. The ACC's agreement with Notre Dame is that Notre Dame plays at least five ACC teams every year. And so that rotates around as well.
Even though they're not in the league.
That's right.
Yeah, they're doing that as kind of a gift.
Don't expect it to be that way forever.
That's going to change.
What's it going to change to?
Notre Dame will be in the ACC.
Notre Dame probably will be in the ACC
as a full conference.
As a full conference
member.
It'll probably come when NBC decides they don't want to pay Notre Dame by themselves as much anymore.
Oh, well, they have their own schedule and their own time show, don't they?
And it will come about when the college football playoff almost requires you to be a conference champion to qualify for the playoff.
Right now, Notre Dame has a special dispensation.
Right, from the guy over in Rome.
Right. when they say, okay, you've got to win your conference championship to be in the college football playoff, Notre Dame will tuck their tails and...
Now, these conferences, there are five big conferences, is that it?
That's correct. Yeah.
What's their status as far as trusts and as far as competition and as far as costs, money and investment, all that big stuff that surrounds these teams. Is there an issue that's developing, or is it all settled? Is everybody happy with the way it is?
No.
Including the
You mean,
the antitrust
are more teams going to move? Is that your question?
No, that may be part of my question, but are these five conferences so much in control of football that everything else is kind of tertiary, secondary out?
Well, there's a third. There's another player in controlling it. And that's ESPN.
Okay. So what's the factor there?
Television.
I know, but I mean, where's the...
They negotiate with the conferences for TV contracts.
They tell you,
some conferences have their own TV network.
Well, now the ACC is doing that, aren't they?
2019 will be the first.
Yeah.
But the SEC has had a TV network for a couple of years.
And the Big Ten's had one for about 5 years.
Yeah, and that was the first one. Okay. University of Texas has its own TV network.
Own TVs, whatever.
So anyway, is this as football continues to get a lot of criticism, primarily as far as the health of the players is concerned, what's this going to mean to the game in this big world of money?
Well, pretty much football funds all these other sports.
Okay.
That's why Anson Dorrance is talking about he would like for women's soccer to be revenue neutral.
Sure.
But just about every other sport except for basketball, it has to be funded by football. And that includes all the women's sports.
Right.
And so if you've got a large sports program, you've got to make money with football.
Well, what's the concussion issue and things like that mean to the long-term health of this sport?
I didn't realize when you were talking about health, you were talking about actual physical health.
well, physical health and financial health.
Right.
Well, UNC is probably the most prominent research facility for concussion research in the country. I'm going to butcher this fellow's name, Dr. Guskowitz.
Kevin Guskowitz.
He's an NFL consultant and also I believe a consultant for all football regarding concussions, and the protocol for
he is now vice chancellor at the university.
I saw he was promoted not too long ago.
So go give us the story on this.
Well, they've been doing research for a number of years, and there have been some changes. I think that from, we'll say, Pop Warner football on up, the way that folks are taught to tackle, it used to be, you know, basically spear with your head.
Mm-hmm.
And it still happens. But there are penalties for, you know, leading with your head. There are penalties for hitting other players in the head with on tackles. There are trying to take as much of the head contact violence out of the game as they possibly can. There are ejections and things of that nature that have increased. So they're trying to change the rules to make it safer. Also, helmets have become, I don't know how much safer, certainly a lot more expensive, and hopefully a lot safer.
I think they're trying to do all they can, really. But when you take people as big and fast as these people are and colliding, I mean, it's a violent sport.
It's a contact sport, that's for sure.
And also moving the kickoff line too, right?
Right.
Yeah, they moved it back up.
What's that mean?
I mean, just the distance between where the ball gets kicked off and then where the receiving team gets it.
So where are the lines now? The kickoff line has moved back five yards longer?
No, they actually, I think, moved it back closer.
Closer to the goal line.
To the goal line to try to have more kicks go into the end zone.
So into the end zone, so there won't be run. There's a lot of violent collisions.
That's where the
kickoff returns.
Mm-hmm.
So
there are people talking about actually doing away with kickoffs. Although I think most people that play and coach and like all that aren't in favor of that, but there have been some discussions about doing away with the actual kickoff.
Well, of course, there seem to be plenty of football players. There are probably not as many in the lower ages, though, as opposed to things like soccer. Well, soccer is the same time of the year, I guess, as football. So if mothers don't want their children to be hurt, they might direct them towards soccer. Is that happening more?
I would think so.
You know, I haven't done the research on that, but there tend to be, from what I can see and what I can read, Some high schools have a tough time fielding a substantial football team. They might have only 30 players.
Three high schools within the sound of our voice are having that problem.
Are they?
Absolutely.
Wow. Now, when Ian was a child and you were in grammar school and going into these sports, I know your mother was very determined that you would not play football. And I don't know whether that was your decision or her decision.
Yeah, I also wanted to play hockey for a while, too, and she steered me clear of that.
Hockey? Okay, well, that's another risky sport.
That's definitely a contact.
If
you like your teeth, you probably shouldn't play hockey.
So anyway, this is an issue that I think is going to continue.
Absolutely.
And I do think I saw something about a helmet, new helmet design recently, and that could be a big answer to the concussion issue.
Yeah, there have been new designs. Kevin Guskowitz, if that's proper.
This is your local person here.
Again, one time I heard him speak, and he showed videos of Carolina players who had gotten concussions. And most of those collisions where those concussions occurred were not the violent, the kind you might see on instant replay and all that. They were just like normal blows.
Uh-huh.
And so his point was it can happen that way just as well as it can with the violent head-to-head collisions.
Yeah, it might even happen when you fall and you make contact with the ground.
Well, that's true. That's true. I get to be aged like some of us are. Falling is a heavy risk upon us.
And I suggest you don't play competitive football, Bill.
You might skip hockey, too.
Well, Bill, you and I are old enough to remember in the 40s and 50s to show you how much things have changed. Do you remember when high schools had the shooting team?
Oh, my
goodness. And you would have the kids bringing rifles to school and check them in down in the basement. And
that's legal to do now, again.
Can you imagine that today? How much things have changed.
Well, I enjoyed watching the shooting at the Olympics. Actually, I have to say that.
That was kind of fun.
It's not a gun that
I recognized.
No. We only have a few more minutes. I want to make sure you've covered your predictions. You didn't predict anything for the American League.
We picked Cleveland.
You picked Cleveland. Okay. But how about the ACC in football? You did predict Carolina's going to have a stronger year.
I'm going to stick my neck out and say UNC wins the Coastal Division, and I'll go with Clemson in the other one.
I'm going to probably pick Florida State in the other one. And, of course, my heart would say Carolina, but again, Carolina could have a better team and not have as good a record because, number one, like I said, they play Florida State at Tallahassee. They also play Miami at Miami.
Okay.
Now, we have traditionally done better against Miami than some
certainly
of the,
here.
And well, we've beaten them a couple of times down there, too.
We have.
We play for, of course, we always play Virginia Tech. That's here this year. And they've got a new coach, but they're always tough. No matter where.
I think some of the biggest story in football is the coaching changes.
Yeah,
Mark Richt, formerly of Georgia, is now at Miami, and
Carolina plays seven teams with new coaches this
really?
Year.
Really, boy, you've got yourself on top of that, Bob. I must say, I give you credit for knowing what's going on. But you don't read that in the paper. You must read a lot of different. You follow.
I don't ever read the paper anymore.
So where do you get all this information?
Well, you read it online, stuff
okay.
like that.
Wow. What about basketball? Is your team locally here going to be I don't know what's happening to college basketball because teams change so often. There's nobody that sticks around anymore.
Certainly Duke will reload.
Yep. They have, yes.
And they'll have a bunch of youngsters that and
they got
will
a
start.
They got a pretty good coach over there.
Let's see, Harry Giles, was Harry Giles player of the year in North Carolina? That'd be a second year in a row where Duke has gotten the player of the year in North Carolina.
They've gotten a lot of good young players, I think.
And some other five, so-called five-star athletes. So may be more competitive this year than they were last year.
You know, they're not going to be any more shirts with numbers on them hanging from the rafters of these schools because the players don't stay long enough.
That's an interesting point.
To become heroes of their college. They're not heroes of their college anymore.
Well, North Carolina usually has season players, and they will again.
And Carolina has...
Maybe, but not stars.
Carolina has some criteria for having your jersey in the rafter that a young player could qualify to do that. I mean, if you're like...
A young player who doesn't stay?
MVP of the Final Four.
If you're a National Player of the Year or one of those kind of things, you could become... You could have your jersey hanging in the rafters.
So it's possible.
It is possible.
I mean, last year, Bryce Johnson was a senior, and he was...
Yeah. Bryce was good, yeah.
He improved a lot. Cool. You're right about that. The Tyler Hansbrough's of the world, you won't see that many times.
Yeah, Christian Laettner played 4 years.
Well, that was a little bit before the phenomenon.
People were leaving for the rollovers.
Right.
Well, Christian Laettner's now got to pay off his debts.
Yeah. It was his birthday a couple of days ago.
It's too bad. Okay, it's about five of. We've got about two more minutes. I want to make sure you fellows have said everything that you have ready for this world-famous show. And, we have to schedule you for your next one.
Well, I just want to put a plug in for the East Chapel Hill Rotary Club. I just came from their teacher supply store where we supply... teachers in Chapel Hill Carborough school system, about 600 of them, supplies for their classrooms.
Good.
They've been doing that for, 8 years now?
About 8 or 9 years. So that'll be going on today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. And it's a great project.
Well, we got something at the Kiwanis Club you're a member of in Hillsborough, Tim.
We got our annual Kiwanis Club barbecue coming up on September 30th in Hillsboro. We'll be serving out of the Exchange Club, and we may be calling you folks for sponsorships, or if you want to get some lunches, we deliver on Friday, September 30th.
And the Kiwanis Club is also working on a race.
Oh, that's athletics there.
Right.
Yeah, half marathon, Hillsboro half.
Right. That's in
October 2nd.
October 2nd, and the Kiwanis Club is volunteering for that. I want to thank some people who support this club. One is our favorite ambassador, Michael Cotter, who's been on the show about 10 or 12 times. He'll be on the show again in September. He is an underwriter of this show. I would also like to thank the Triangle Association of Health Underwriters. These are professionals who will work with individuals, help them to work their way through the struggles of finding health insurance for themselves or their families or their businesses. And I would also like to thank a member of this community who will support community radio until the end of time. Next week, an old friend you may all know, a well-known individual, Professor Emeritus Orrin Pilkey, who's noted for his study of, I think, every beach in the world. And he's got two new books out. One is called Sand, written with his son, and it's a book for children about beaches. And it has a lot of games in it that kids can play at the beach. So Orrin will be here next Monday, and we have some great shows coming up. None of our shows are quite like this show with these two outspoken gentlemen. Rocco was quite quiet today. He usually talks more, but he just was so entranced with what these guys were saying, and Ian was being a very polite young man and not paying attention, but giggling a lot.
Tim pointed out you said outspoken, not outstanding.
Yeah. L.A. Bachelor is due to be on the show right now. He comes sometimes, and he comes he's here. L.A. Bachelor is here live, and he'll be on the show right after this show is over. So stay tuned to WCOM, your voice in the community, and be sure to tune in next week and hear a conversation with Orrin Pilkey. And Tim and Bob, you guys are great. It's always fun, and I always do learn something.
Well, good for you.
In spite of what they say.
Thank you.
Good for you. Thanks a lot, Bill.